Green Talk with Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome to Screen Talk, show number 20, I believe. I can't believe how fast these are going by. Today we have a brilliant guest, Mr. Robert Popper, who, when I read out his list of credentials in a few minutes, you will have... there's absolutely no doubt you would have seen a lot of his work. He's a brilliant writer. We'll be talking to him shortly. I just want to say, actually, because I've never done this on the show, if you listen to the show as a podcast, as a download podcast, rate the show, because I would love some ratings. I'd love people to express how they feel about it. We get a lot of lovely feedback, but no one's rated it yet. We live in a world where everything is rated using stars. I only found out recently that as a customer of Uber, you are also rated. I just thought you rate the driver, but they rate you as well. So that means now I want to be the best customer, the best passenger in the world. It gets a bit embarrassing because I get in the car and I'm like, hey, why don't you sit in the back and I'll drive? Do you want to come back? I'll cook you dinner, give you a blowy. You know, because I really want those 5 stars. The idea that I've got 3 stars anywhere is, or less. God, I wonder if anyone's been given 1 star on Uber. Probably someone that threw up in the back. Anyway, so please rate the show, spread the love, tell people, or tune in on Fridays on FUBAR Radio where it goes out live. I'm going to start the show. This is a song by Buddy Holly, who I think is an underrated, brilliant singer from the soundtrack Juno. This is Dearest.
Say we'll part. You scold, and you were so bold. Years together, yeah, our love will grow old. Yeah, our love will grow old. You may be a million miles away. Please believe me, yeah, when you hear me say I'm gonna treat you right. Yeah, I'm gonna treat you right.
FUBAR Radio presents
Ian Holdsworth.
If you want to come here,
yeah,
you need to have a green card. We want to make sure that everyone's working, everyone's being equal to
today. Are you sure it only said 92% Tory?
Did it not say you on the front of it?
No, I'm not Tory. I'm Lib Dem.
What about the people in the UK that don't work then? Are you okay with that? Or is it just the immigrants that you're not that mad on?
Everyone needs to work. Everyone needs to work.
Except
if you.
If
you can work, you should be working. Oh, no, I am working.
Why? Why is that the rule? Surely you should have the choice to not work if you don't want to.
Well, that's fine then. You just can't get free root canals.
Every Monday,
Ian Holdsworth,
from 2 p.m. on FUBAR Radio. Screen Talk with Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
So, my first guest today is an extremely talented writer, producer, and part-time performer, which I want to get to the bottom of when we start talking. You'll know him as the creator of Channel 4's Friday Night Dinner, one half of the team behind the cult hit Look Around You, producer of Peep Show, and the man behind Robin Cooper's Time Waster Letters. He's also written and script edited on shows like In Between Us, The IT Crowd, and South Park. He is, of course, Mr. Roberto Popper. Roberto. Popper.
Ciao.
Popper's a brilliant name, by the way. I haven't prepared this, but it, you know, I can't say Popper and then not ask you where that comes from.
Well, I can tell you it is an odd name. Yeah. I think it is probably German.
Really?
Mm, or something. Yeah, I think it's German or around there, sort of.
Popper?
Yeah, Popper. Mm, Popper.
Robert Popper,
yeah.
Yeah. That's more.
But we were like the
Sweden.
Good Germans.
Yeah.
So the persecuted Germans.
There's no sort of on the fence with the whole German thing, is there?
No.
You're either good or bad. First of all, right, the South Park. That was the last credit I mentioned of yours. I'm going to start there. I know that's sort of in the middle of your career so far, rather than beginning or end or most recent.
The end,
yeah.
It's finished.
By the way, we are going to tell you about the end.
On Fubar.
That would be great. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the end of my career. How did that come about? How did you end up writing on South Park?
Well, I got to know Matt Stone who's one of the guys, so there's Matt Stone and Trey Parker. And I got to know him through Peter Serafinowicz, because he'd done a voice on...
He went and done
a voice on South Park. And and then when I went to LA, Los Angeles, I met... Matt Stone.
Was it like, you gotta, I'm gonna reach out to Matt and Trey? Was it that sort of thing?
Kind of, yeah. It's funny, I didn't really recognise Trey at the time when he was in the room. I thought he was just a man that was sort of in the room.
Yeah.
And then I realised it was him about 20 minutes later. That was quite embarrassing. But Matt was...
Did you have to backtrack? Had you said anything?
I had to sort of text Matt, by the way, was I awkward in the room? He said, no, I didn't notice. I got to know Matt. He was just like really easy person to get on with. He was cool. And he used to say that like every year they would go away, him, Trey and a few writers and a buddy, to somewhere really nice, like Carlisle. I don't know, somewhere hot in America.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to think, please ask me, but I didn't say it, but I think it hard.
As the buddy or a group of...
Someone else they asked.
Yeah.
And then one day, a few years ago, I got an email, hey man, do you remember me saying that sometimes we go on these amazing retreats for 5 days? And before he'd finished, I just got to get to the end and I sort of saw my name in it and I just went, yes please. And so I went off for like a weekend or like 5 days to somewhere in California that was amazing.
Would have been horrible if he said, you remember I told you about these amazing, just letting you know we're going on one. Thanks.
Yeah, we'll put some pictures up on Facebook. You can have a look at any time.
That could have gone anywhere.
So we went there and I said, what work do I need to do? He said, nothing, just hang out. And it was just hanging out and we were just sort of in the morning, just sort of, I think what it is, because you know South Park, they make it in 6 days. I don't know if you know this.
Yeah.
6 days. So they're terrified the whole time that they won't have a show. And it's like extra ideas that they might have if there's an emergency and their brilliant brains can't think of things. But it was mainly just sitting around just talking crap for like 2 hours a day, then swimming and having lunch and then having quite a nice dinner. And then at the end they said, would you like to come and join the writing team for a bit? And I said yes, and then I ended up, I said yes, and I wrote down yes. And then,
by the way, that what you've just described
there... It's like
there,
a child talking, isn't it?
But what you've just described of the days
the
when you went
career.
Away, it was like, one of my questions was going to be, how do you, what would you say is the difference between writing on an American show and a British show? And I think you've just described definitely one of them. You know, we wake up, we talk shit, we go for a swim, have a nice dinner.
No, but the actual...
And you're in some... Where did you go, by the way?
It was the... it was the Montage Hotel, I think it was. I'm going to remember in a minute. In California, it was like the nicest hotel I've ever been. I've forgotten the name of it.
And we've stayed in some... I mean, not together as a couple, but I bumped into you in a very nice hotel.
Yeah. That was fun.
Yeah.
In... where was that? In Trent.
Yeah.
That is a place.
The Northeast.
Northeast. Anyway, yeah, so then I joined for like 4 shows. And writing on the show... Basically, you don't... It's really weird... There's no like writing. It's really odd. Like when I went in, the writer said, this is the weirdest writing room in like the world, probably. You come in at 10 and then Trey comes in and he sort of walks around the table and there's like 5 of you, I think. And then
is like less than most shows, isn't it?
There's no laptops. There's no pens.
What?
No one writes anything, I promise.
Well, if you have an amazing idea and you forget it.
People say things to him, like ideas. And he doesn't write any joke down, nothing. And then he goes, he might write up on the thing like three scene ideas, like Cartman needs to go to the dentist, Cartman doesn't go to the dentist, the dentist runs off to
this
Cartman,
is the
whatever.
The dentist episode.
Do you remember the dentist episode? Yeah, it's running and coming.
Then he doesn't go.
And then in the end, he goes, but the guy gives him like teeth, face backwards.
Yeah.
The one that won
By the
Emmy.
Way,
anyway.
We should send this to Trey and Kinsley.
Anyway, and so then he goes, great, I've got three scene ideas. You can go now. And it's like about 12:45 in the afternoon. And you go, okay. And you have lunch there. And then you go home. And you come in the next day. And then Matt and Trey have been working like beyond us. And then the writers say to me, now, watch what's going to happen. And you go, and Trey would come in, hey, do you want to see what we did after you left? Sure. And then they lead you into the edit suite. And he's written the three. You've seen, like, they've made the three scenes, which are nothing like what were discussed. Finished, voiced, animated, and music. Done. Just finished. And the writer said that they've never, ever seen a script, and they still don't know how it's all done so quickly. It was mad.
I'm genuinely...
One day, we sat in that room till 3 in the afternoon. And we were like, bloody, this is
this
late.
Is
what the hell is going on?
I'm
going
to call the WGA.
Exactly.
My jaw is literally on the floor with
it
that.
Is,
how?
Your jaw is somehow. Well, but you are quite near the floor.
I'm lying down with, you know, like when I was watching a film at home in the 80s, you know, on your belly.
Exactly.
That's why it was only an inch to the floor. But I, if anyone knows anything about animation and how difficult that is, forgetting live action, you know, sitcoms or whatever, that is, I mean, it's remarkable that they do that. I mean, yeah, there's some dark art going on.
Well, he's like a super genius, like Trey Parker, who was, is, his brain is on a different level. Yeah, ridiculous.
I've seen that that interview where they talk about having gone to, is it the Oscars or the Golden Globes
on
LSD?
Acid, yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
That is phenomenal.
Which one of them was dressed as a lady?
They were both, I think,
dressed as a lady. Yeah. And then when they got there, they realised this is a terrible idea because actually it's just boring awards.
Yeah, and you...
For like best use of whatever, an animatronic arm. Yeah. Goes to, yeah.
I imagine that trying to keep still for 4 hours on LSD is also quite a difficult task.
Well, you
in a
would
dress.
Know.
Yeah, I would. That's both on and off LSD.
Exactly.
But not in a dress. I've only had to do that for 10 minutes or so.
Right, fair enough.
Yeah. Well, look, your first song of... We always get our guests to pick a couple of songs or pieces of score from films and TV. And appropriately...
It's Imagine by John Lennon.
This is from the film Imagine by John Lennon. This is, of course, from South Park, the beautiful little ditty, Uncle Fucker.
Shut your fucking face, Uncle Fucker. You're a cock-sucking, ass-licking Uncle Fucker. You're an Uncle Fucker, yes it's true, nobody fucks uncles quite like you.
Shut your fucking face, Uncle Fucker. You're the one that fucked your uncle, Uncle Fucker. You don't eat or sleep or mow the lawn, you just fuck your uncle all day long.
What's going on here?
Yesterday,
Uncle Baka, that's you, N-C-L-E, fuck you, Uncle Baka!
Suck my balls.
Just a quick little summer balls at the end. So, can I ask you a question? This is like, trying to be serious about the art form of comedy.
Yeah.
Why are farts so funny and yet so frowned upon?
I don't find them funny.
Don't you?
No.
I'm sorry, but when I watched this morning, just to remind myself of this...
Oh, I found it in South Park, the farting. That is funny, but,
like
but it's
a,
more
because
I like the characters. They make me laugh. And the kind of patheticness of it makes me laugh. But like when people fart in front of me...
Oh, no, no, no.
I think that's not funny.
No,
that's kind of like...
Absolutely.
That's just like...
That's just disgusting.
That's sort of gas.
Yeah.
That's like an unpleasant gas.
I definitely wasn't talking about in person.
You mean, right.
On television.
You mean like in like Benny Hill... when he farts.
Well, maybe it is a context thing, because like in this, or
I know
in,
a
say
lot of your stand-up was
just farting.
60% was fart-based material, and the remaining 40 was just you farting.
Yeah. Well,
and
actually, it was the other way around.
That was a pretty good show, that one.
It was, yeah.
That was the other way around.
Yeah.
Well, I think you started that way, and as you progressed, you realised...
I had more to say about it. No, but I'm talking about like that song, to do an entire sort of middle eight melody on farts, and or in a like Farrelly Brothers movie or something, farting can
the
be
Ellie
hilarious.
Brothers.
The Ellie Brothers.
For the Ellie
for
Brothers.
Ellie
they
Brothers.
Made it for the Ellie Brothers. You know that South Park, they make all their stuff for the Ellie Brothers.
Oh, of course. I don't, yeah. Who are these Ellie mysterious Ellie Brothers?
No one really knows, but it's all done in their honour for the Ellie Brothers.
Oh, I love that.
Good old Ellie Brothers.
Ellie Brothers. Yeah, so I was going to ask
Smelly
you.
Smelly Ellie.
I was going to ask you. You're running with the Ellie thing, aren't
I'll
you?
Stop that now.
Let's go back to the start, Robert Popper. I know you pretty well, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we've never cried together, but...
We haven't cried together.
I think beyond that,
We've drunk together.
And
not for a long time.
No, not for a long time. Well, we're both in our 40s now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't
I just don't know. You're with child.
I am. Yeah. Not at the moment here.
No. You'd have the most obedient child if you did.
Sit still and stop breathing.
But you, I thought I'd do a little bit of research on you. And by that, I mean I went on Wikipedia for 2 minutes.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, sure.
And what I didn't know is, and I found this quite interesting, it says that you started your career working for Peter Richardson.
Mm.
Is that true?
Yes.
Has Wikipedia got it right?
Yes.
Wow. So how old were you then and
25.
How did you get that?
25.
And how did you get
or
the
26.
Job?
I can't remember which one. I wrote letters.
You don't have to be absolutely bang on accurate.
I started late in comedy. Not that late. I wrote mad letters. I didn't know anyone in TV, although I did get something like my parents' friend's friend's son worked with Esther Ranson.
Mm-hmm.
And he did take me to watch the news being filmed. That was my introduction to TV.
Okay. Did she... Oh, well, she just knew someone who knew someone.
Yeah.
She didn't do news, did she? She was
no. My only way into TV was my parents' friend's 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 son worked with Esther Ranson, and he couldn't help because he didn't know anything about comedy. But he could get me to sit in and watch the news being filmed for half an hour. That's what I did, and then that didn't help. So I don't have an in. I'm gonna have to write to people, and I guess everyone wanted to work in TV then. Now it's the bloody internet. And you just send the internet an email. And so I...
internet@gmail.com.
.com.
Yeah.
Webhouse.
.org. That's a charity. That's...
Yeah. I'm saying now. You've ruined it all.
No, we're talking... Peter Richardson.
Oh, my God. The Ellie Brothers.
You've got a good point there.
I wrote letters. And I thought, well, how are people going to remember me? And so I invented a CV, and I did a sort of quite a boring letter saying I'd love to work with you. And my CV looked completely normal, but it was a fake CV that said that I was a sole survivor of an air crash in Canada when I was 3, and I was rescued by wolves. And I spent like 10 years reared by wolves until I was rescued by missionaries. And so you had to kind of read on. It looks normal.
Yeah.
And I think I worked at a pencil factory because I had an affinity for wood, having been in forests. And I worked in the sharpening, and then I moved to the blunting department. Anyways, all this nonsense. I worked in a syrup factory, and then I...
How long was this?
It was quite
the
long.
Bio
was
on this CV.
There was
CV.
A slight references from the employers.
All right.
And that got me noticed.
I'm not fucking surprised.
Sectioned.
Yeah. That's quite a bold move, because that could have gone one of two ways, couldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And was it Peter himself who got in touch?
I turned up at his place and nervous. And when I arrived, I heard him go, "Bring me the Wolf Man," which was quite cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And I worked there. He's brilliant. He's also he's very vague.
Mm.
So I met him and he was with a bunch of people. And I said, "I'd love to work here." He goes, "Yeah, we'll just come along tomorrow." Okay. And I did. And then the rest of people
were
like,
"Room writing?
Yes.
Is that
official? What are you doing here?" Peter said I could come tomorrow. Did he? I sort of bullied my way in.
Not again, Peter.
Yeah, I sort of bullied my way in.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And you had, other than your very, very tenuous link with Esther Anson, you had no other... Because what I was going to say is that when I was younger and I wanted to be an actor, I had zero connections.
You didn't even know Esther Anson.
I didn't. You, yeah.
No,
you were pretty much... You were in by my standards. But you made a joke about emailing the internet. Like, then, it was like, well, how do you even know who to write to?
Went to Hendon Library and got out the old copies of the Radio Times and copied the name down of the producers of the I didn't even know what a producer was, of the shows that I liked.
Mm.
Sad.
Well, I think I did something similar,
did you used to get the stage then? You must have, if you were an actor, or did you?
No.
You must have bought it once in your life.
I think someone told me that there's this thing called Spotlight or Contacts or something, so I had to go to the library, hire it out and write down all these. And I did the stupid thing of going, oh, well, look, Harrison Ford's represented by, or Michael Caine. And then you just write to the biggest agents. You're like, I was like an 18-year-old, complete unknown, not even trained. And I'm going to, hi, I see you represent Michael Caine. I'm looking for a new agent.
Did people write back to you?
Yeah, you get. I also wrote to Rick Mail. There's a Peter Richardson connection.
And did he write back?
His agent wrote back. And I just wrote to him saying that he's my hero and I'd like to write something for him. And they just Rick's very busy at the moment.
But
I didn't get one of the classic responses that he sent to some fans, like, fuck off or
did
whatever.
He?
Yeah,
used to write. In the end, it's weird because you ended up writing The Young Ones on your own, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Amazing. Yeah. Just me, Ben Elton, and I gave him a credit. He just
sat around.
Snowballed.
He made snowballs.
But so you do just have to completely take a pot shot back then. But now it's like you can find out where people live.
I know.
And what they're having for lunch. Because if you can break into Deliveroo, you can find out what they've ordered.
You can hack it.
Hack, jump on the back of the Deliveroo delivery man, and then you arrive.
You're in.
You're basically in. Hide in the pizza box. With a script. And you're in. I mean, I feel like saying to people, but then I sound old.
How did you get into acting?
This isn't about me, Edinburgh. But Edinburgh, it's a simple thing. Heard about Edinburgh, wrote a play with my friend. Took it up and
what
then
the play?
Oh, it was called The Hitman and Him. It was a two-hander. It was a play on the word Hitman and Her, which
it's
was a
TV program.
Remember it?
Of course I did. Yeah.
And we got audiences because they genuinely sort of went, oh, I think
so
I know
that. So that was like the show where it was
Pete Waterman
and Thingy, who's now on Michaela Strachan on Springwatch.
Yeah.
And they're just in a club for 1989, 93 to that sort of music
late at night.
Yeah, it was weird.
It was great. Do you remember late night TV? Right, we're going way off subject here, but do you remember late night TV from midnight or 1 o'clock through to about 5 a.m. was brilliant. Like you could actually watch.
The best thing I saw on late night TV, because I was talking to my mate about it, was it was like a bit of video art thing, and it was in black and white. And I found it recently online. It's quite hard to find, and it was just a man, a close-up camera on a man's face, and the man cough, and then you heard a voice off go, again? Again? And it went on for 9 minutes of that, the man going, again, and then he cough. Again, that was just fantastic.
That is amazing. Was that what channel? Was that? That sounds like
must
a channel.
Must be
4.
Channel Four.
Yeah, of course.
It was Channel.
But they used to show short films and things late at night, didn't they?
Mm.
But then ITV had obviously Prisoner Cell Block H. It had the little picture show.
I didn't watch that though. Did you watch Prisoner Cell?
I did for a while.
That,
yeah.
Right, yeah.
In my sort
that
of
was just yeah. Maybe
pot
I did watch a bit of it. Yeah.
Teenage years.
What?
Yes, I smoked
oh
some.
God.
I smoked some wacky backy back in the
oh
day.
Oh my God.
I don't condone it. I don't condone it. Everyone that's listening. But I do encourage it. You're becoming the worst interviewee I've actually ever had. You just don't want to answer questions.
I do. I'm going to.
I'm going. How did you actually start writing stuff then? Sounds like you did the minute you wrote a CV. But
weirdly, I still think that's the funniest thing I've ever written. I sometimes find it, and I do sort of read and go, that was the funniest thing you've ever done.
So after 15 years of success, you're going, this will never top that CV.
It will never top it.
Series 4 of
it was really,
Friday Night Dinner,
it's not as funny. It wasn't as funny. I don't know, I think I just always sort of wrote bits and bobs. And then the first thing I wrote was a thing in like 98 with Mark Freeland, who used to run BBC Comedy, and Matt Lucas and David Walliams for Channel 4. Wow. And it was a one-off like 45-minute programme, which was terrible, called it was called You Are Here. And it was kind of like set in a village. And it was around the time when The League of Gentlemen made The League of Gentlemen, which is obviously one of the brilliant, most brilliant shows. And we were doing, I guess it was like vaguely similar at the time, but sort of maybe a bit weirder and not as good. And it was, yeah, we did that, and that was for Channel 4. It was quite bad. And it's just about like a weird village.
Yeah.
It was quite, but it had ridiculously good people in it, like Paul Kay, you know, from Dennis Pennis at those times, John Thompson, had Matt and David, Keith Allen in it when he was drinking, and had like Eddie Marzan in it, Eddie Marzipan in it, and Sally Phillips. Had like lots of good people, but it was terrible.
Right, well, it can happen.
It can happen.
It's the weird thing.
Look at Fawlty Towers.
Good people, bad show. I remember you. I think I first met you when you were a commissioning editor, which now to me seems like weird that you would be that you'd work on the other side.
Yes, I was.
You know,
Were we meet in Edinburgh, or was it you'd come in and pitch to me?
I think we we didn't ever actually. No, I dealt with Cheryl and Ian, but I remember meeting you at the Channel 4 building.
Yes. I was there for 3 years. Yeah. It was fun though.
Did you enjoy it?
I didn't ever think I wanted to do it, and I got asked in. And by the guy, Kevin Ligo, who used to run the department, who was brilliant. Yeah, he was a really brilliant guy. And at the end of the interview, I said, why? He didn't tell me. He just sort of wanted to chat. He said, there's a job going for a commissioning editor. Because Channel 4, I always liked. I liked the comedy there. And it seemed like a good place. They were making good stuff. And he was saying, you know, how we like to do things that are different and, you know, odd. If you can do odd things and... just sounded like it felt like a good place to go into, like as opposed to when I used to go into the BBC, that sort of felt like I was going into a hospital or something. It's just so depressing. But and I said, oh right, oh it's a job. And he said, yeah, I've been meeting loads of people. Who have you been meeting? I said, and he took out a list from the bin of all the names he'd been meeting. Wow. And he showed me and I said, what do you think of these people? And I just went no, because I realised I wanted the job. I wouldn't no. And then I got
funnily enough, of these people,
I don't think any of them.
And did you not wasn't there loads of paperwork and bureaucracy you had to
not
deal with?
Not much,
really.
No, it was pretty good. Like, yeah, it was quite creative, you know.
Do you think it's changed? Because I can't imagine, like, the show you just mentioned that you first wrote on.
Yeah.
And your show, Look Around You, which we'll get to in a minute.
How would you make that now?
Those stuff get made now?
I don't know. And weirdly, they let me leave Channel 4 for a bit to make Look Around You for the BBC. That was really weird while I was a commissioner of Channel 4.
It was good times, wasn't it?
Wow. I know. We would make some weird things then. Yeah. It's really hard now to make weird stuff on, like,
The
thing would be Channel 4 and BBC 2, and you can't really do it, like weird stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose the weirdest thing they have, I guess, would be Toast of London. That would be the weirdest thing. But even weirder stuff we would make then, you can't get. I think that now they just say put it on the internet, or there are so many other, you know, like Sky Arts might do that, I suppose.
I mean, do you think it will ever, because of that darn internet, do you think we sound all right?
It's a passing
fad. The bloody internet!
It's a phase.
It is. It will die out soon. Do you think that because of it, it will never go back to a broadcasting, you know, like where shows like Look Around You?
I think it'd be really... Who knows? You know, you never know what people might really demand stuff like that. I don't know, but I don't think they'll probably be making stuff. It's getting weird.
We didn't know at the time how good we had it. That's the weird thing.
Well, were good then.
Well, you know, I always sound a bit like that when I talk about this. But I think there's good stuff out there, but it's just it's slim pickings.
There's loads of good stuff, no?
I feel like it's not loads, you know. When people say, what comedies are you watching? I don't immediately go, right, I'm doing this.
Right.
I'm sort of like, there's some good stuff. What do you like at the moment?
I can't remember any comedies. Well, there's like some good American stuff.
That's what we always end up saying.
I don't normally watch a lot of what's been good on. I really like The Windsors, and that's not something I normally would watch. I thought it was really funny.
Oh, cool.
What have they got? They've got Catastrophe's great show.
Yeah, Channel 4.
Channel 4 is doing the best stuff. Toast is great.
But it's still not like... in the days where there were four shows back to back on a Friday night.
No, they don't have that anymore. Well, they have Friday Night Dinner on, which I like.
Well, there you go. Well, there's a segue for you. Friday Night Dinner, brilliant show, very funny, very well written. I'm going to say something that I've been trying
to... I don't like Jewish people.
I don't like Jewish people, and I hate dinner. So I really struggle to connect with this show. I was surprised when I watched the first ever episode that this was a show that came from you.
Because it's not weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I actually
It's actually quite, not mainstream, but accessible or relatable.
Well, I'd always wanted to do a...
I'm glad you responded well to that, because I was
fine,
thinking, how
fine.
Do I say this without...
It's fine, it's totally
to
fine.
Some writers, if you go, it's more accessible or broad or whatever, people go, oh, you know, they think that's an insult.
Not at all. Well, I wanted to do a sitcom. Mm. And, well, actually, I'd always wanted to do something about... I couldn't... It was something to do with the way me and my friends spoke growing up. Mm-hmm. My dad was particularly... funny, he's lovely and a bit odd because he wouldn't wear a top in the house.
Yeah, one of my favourite characteristics.
Yeah,
by the way.
And just would say odd, kind of really odd things. My grandma, I could do a whole show about my grandma because she's like the craziest. She was like the funniest old woman.
Do you like onions?
She once said to me, yes. She held an onion in her hand, peeled onion.
To me, it is like a juicy apple. Look.
And then she ate an entire onion raw in front of my face.
No
way.
That was
my grandma. So
that isn't
I used
what
to tell
ended
stories.
Her, was it?
It wasn't the
no,
onion.
Okay.
It wasn't the onion.
Good, good.
So I used to kind of tell my, you know, to talk about this a lot to people. Yeah. And people just say, oh, your family, that's quite funny. And I knew there was something in there. I don't know. It was like I used to go home like Friday nights and have dinner at my mm-hmm. family and my brother. And my
Which
brother
is
and
a
I,
Jewish ritual.
Yeah,
right?
And we're not yeah. religious at all, but that's mm-hmm. what we did. It's yeah. like Sunday lunch. And my brother and I, to this day, have always, like, we still fight and play fight like children, and we always ruin each other's food and drink. So it's constantly sorting, you know, if you have a haircut, hair goes in the food. Mm-hmm. It's constant. And I just find that really
You're
fun.
How old?
29. And I wanted to do something that captured that. And then when I thought suddenly Friday Night Dinner, I thought, that's a good name.
Yeah.
And they arrive and they leave. Oh, that's a show. And I thought, well, it's a sitcom and it's kind of set in the house. And I thought, yeah, there's something in that.
That must have been a eureka moment, because for
was,
every
I was
writer,
in the it was in the bath.
When you think of like a neat one-liner, you're like, yes!
I was in the bath, I promise you. Caroline Leddy, who runs Channel 4 Comedy,
was
left
with
now.
You.
She was in the bath, passed me the towel. She's now the exec producer on the show, mm-hmm. and she's brilliant. And she said to me, look, I love your stories about your family. If you ever come up with an idea that's good, I'll commission a script. And I was in the bath, and I suddenly thought Friday Night Dinner. And I got out of the bath, I put my towel on, and my other towel, my three towel, my towel on, and I phoned her, and I said, towel one.
Towel two.
I said, towel three, channel four. I phoned her, and I said, remember you said that if I've got the idea, and yeah. I'm going to say the idea, it's three words, and I reckon you'll say you'll commission a script. She said, okay, and I went, Friday Night Cocky. Dinner, and she went, commissioned.
Amazing.
Nice, yeah, and then it took bloody years before it was on TV.
Yeah, yeah.
But so, I know, yeah, because I obviously normally make really weird stuff. To me, though, there is
but
like...
But not really weird, but just
really
a little
weird.
Bit
it's
more,
much more
accessible, left field.
Less,
in,
it's,
yeah.
It's kind of... I wanted to do a show that felt... I don't really... I wanted to do a show that I just thought could be laugh out loud funny, but would... I like the idea when you turn it on, it looks kind of normal, and then there's a man that doesn't wear a top. I think you go, whoa, what's this?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's the oddness, I guess, from the way they talk and the situations and the neighbour, Mark Heap. But yeah, it was quite nice to do something. Actually, oh, people are watching this, and you can watch it with your kids, although it's quite rude. Yeah.
And also real, rather
real,
than like
yeah.
a bit more about, because, you know, obviously one of the things I've always loved about your comedy, I think, is that sort of comedy that other comics love as well. And it's very much about the joke or the concept.
Exactly.
Or the,
yeah. Or
know.
There's like, it's funny because when you do, you realise that when you make a lot of stuff, like say Look Around, it is a parody. The minute there's like a parody or like it's filmed in a style, which is great. I mean, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
You sort of, there's... You're sort of putting a layer between yourself and the viewers. That's fine.
Yeah.
The people that get it, like even Peep Show, which is brilliant, it's some people that go, it's too weird. I don't like the way it's filmed. It's too, mm-hmm. What's this? So they won't watch. And suddenly when you have something that's what's filmed pretty conventionally, my show, it's very fast, mm-hmm. but it's pretty conventional. There's no layers.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think it's suddenly you realize, oh, quite a lot of people watch this show. Yeah. It's odd because I'm used to like the,
you're not,
the weirdos.
That's a new
liking
thing
it.
For you. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like the seven weirdos that like it.
Will you do something as? Will you? Could you? What direction would you like to go after this? Even more? Like, would you? Have you got the hunger for those ratings now? And you? Ratings. Or yeah. Do you like making stuff that loads of people watch, and you want to go to BBC One, or do you want? And do you now want to kick against that and make something ultra fucking weird?
No, I mean I do my little. I get all my weirdness out when I'm doing my stupid telephone calls,
yeah, well,
and silly phone calls and things and blah blah blah, and my little side projects like that. I don't really know, actually. I'm sort of thinking I've got a sort of idea, but I can't work out which way it's going to go. But
do you want to workshop it on my podcast?
Yeah, can we? Can we do it now?
So
it's about the IRA.
I like it. I like it. A nostalgia sitcom.
Yeah. BBC One.
Yeah. You just mentioned your alter ego, Robin Cooper. You do these strange phone calls.
Mm.
What do you just
Why?
Do them when it occurs to you?
Yes.
Because you actually, well, can I say got in trouble with the Gordon Brown one, or there was a bit of a...
Yeah, that was funny.
How did... What happened there?
Well,
so tell people what the Robin...
Okay, so
some people might not know about this.
Just seven people know about it. It must be, yeah. So I did... years ago, I did these books called The Time Waster Letters that were like... I used to write mad letters to... weird organisations like the British Lizard Society or something, and I'd write crazy letters and they'd write back and I'd write back.
You should do a book of CVs, by the way.
Oh yeah, I should do. Yeah. Just,
and
just,
it was
just general CVs.
And it was always Robin Cooper.
Robin Cooper.
Yeah.
That's right. And then I'd always made kind of childish telephone calls, always.
Yeah.
Not to be rude to people or show them up, just I like the idea that you're having this crazy conversation that's not trying to show anyone up or anything. And I would just do these when I'm bored. And I did one once to... It's at the time of Gordon Brown that he'd been... They said he was apparently bullying people. Remember
right,
that time?
Yeah.
He's been bullying. And there was a phone-in about it. And I thought, oh, this will be good. And when you phone in, say, LBC, like, which is the, you know, the big phone-in, which I'm now banned from. So my phone disconnects if I phone them. It just
really?
My house phone does. And my wife's phone that I've been using to phone them, that can't get through. So three phones banned. Anyway.
And this happened after you met your wife?
This happened after I was banning. So I went on for a while.
The forces at work have found out that you've met someone and banned her phone as well. Well, where is Edward Snowden when you need him?
Exactly. Where is he?
Okay, so.
So, I can't remember now.
Yeah, got your attention.
I phoned them up. I thought, what happens is you phone and you get through to the operator and they ask, hello, what's your name? What do you want to call about? And it has to be something pretty amazing to get on.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, and I do the voice, but I do it a bit less mad. So the voice, he's kind of, so I say to him, Gordon Brown came to my, Gordon Brown bully. I saw bullying firsthand when Gordon Brown came to our offices. What do you mean? He lost his temper, blah, blah. Okay, hold on the line. You know, and then within 2 minutes, and I never really plan anything, but I did notice there was a... tangerine, a satsuma or an orange or something in the fruit bowl. And so I phoned and I said,
it's so just in the moment.
Yeah, and I said, what happened? He said, he came to my there's always a lamination factory where I work. I think Robin Cooper works with works within lamination and delamination. I like the idea of unlaminating things.
Yeah.
Anyway, and he lost.
It's
got
to happen, isn't it?
It's got to happen sometimes.
Sometimes.
The accidental lamination of like your birth certificate that you can't have to get it. Anyway. So I said that he came to the factory and received a phone call, and it looked like bad news. And I heard him going, oh, no, oh, no. And he threw I can't remember what it was. It was, what's it called? Tangerine. That was it, a tangerine. He had a tangerine in his hand. He threw the tangerine, and it blocked the one of the lamination and shut down the whole factory. And he called the woman that gave him the tangerine a citric idiot. I was really proud of that. Anyway. Did that. Oh my God, really? Yes.
Blah, who was the DJ?
I can't remember who it was. Blah, blah, blah. It's online. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, goodbye. Funny. I laugh. Ha, ha, ha. That's funny. That's the right. Go to my recording. I like edit it or just get out the boring bit at the beginning and at the end.
Yeah.
Put it online.
Go
done.
Straight for the citric idiot.
Just to citric idiot. Yeah. Done. Funny. And,
Done. Funny. That's what you said to yourself.
Done. Funny. I'm so funny. Anyway, didn't think anything else. And then like a few weeks later, I was on Twitter at night and it just said something like, hey, have you seen the Daily Telegraph? Have you seen the Financial Times? So there's like in lots of News of the Sun, they're reporting that...
I think you mean News of the World, but yeah.
No, no, there was...
The News of the Sun.
Did I say the News,
News
of the
in
Sun?
The Sun.
Oh, the News of the Sun. Sun, S-O-N, yeah. The News of the Sun. It's a religious paper.
Oh, okay,
Son
I
of
like
God.
It, yeah.
And it was in like loads and loads of newspapers that apparently he had thrown a satsuma, a tangerine.
They got it wrong.
Oh. Yeah, and do you remember the weird Hong Kong agency that often does news stories as an animation? Have you ever seen them online? They animate big stories.
Yeah, yeah.
They did an animation in Chinese of my thing, and it's online of a man throwing a thing and a lamination machine breaking. It's fantastic.
This is the gift that keeps on giving.
It's amazing.
You wrote a... Oh, my God, that's amazing.
So it became known as Tangerine Gate.
And do you feel, in some small way, you are the reason the Tories got into power?
Well, that was the aim, of course. You and me, eh?
Yeah.
Oh,
God. It's hard being a Tory in this business, isn't it?
Though, isn't it? It's wonderful.
That's a great... I love that.
That
and
was really fun.
Have you got any more planned?
I can't really write the letters anymore now, because when I started, people didn't use the internet loads. Now they can just go, who's this nutcase? And also, people don't write letters, which is annoying.
Yeah, that is annoying.
It's really
emails,
annoying.
It's not as good, is it?
It's not as good, yeah.
Mm. Doesn't look as nice
doesn't
to print.
Doesn't look as nice,
no.
Yeah.
Do you love performing? Or because you do a little bit.
I do a bit. Sometimes.
Are you frustrated
or
satisfied?
No, I find it a bit boring doing it.
Yeah.
I like doing... I did Charlie Higson's show. What was it called?
Down the Line.
Did that on the radio. Yeah, I love doing that because that's phone calls. And I did Bellamy's People that he did.
Yeah, yeah.
I did a character called Baal. Who spoke like that?
Yes, yes.
And that was fun. But it was completely 100% improvised. So that was quite scary. But that was fun doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about like acting. Do you like acting? You're a proper actor. You're like a very good
proper.
Actor.
I do
you are.
Comedy. Do you know what I've sort of come to realise more lately is that I love performing. I love doing stand-up and I love doing...
Like showing off, basically.
Showing off, yeah.
Showing off.
But when it's acting on screen, I mean, there are times when it's pleasurable, but that whole, like, having to hit your marks and cheat yourself to the right and do it, you know, like, in increments and go off for 2 hours and wait and come back and switch it on in a second, that, to me, is... There's so much craft and technical elements to it. It sort of takes away the sort of immediateness. I kind of like doing this, just... talking
shit,
but
you're
really.
A really good performer. I've seen you lots.
Oh,
you're funny, and your show was great, and you directed it as well, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Very good.
Wow, this has really become about me now. Let's move on. So Look Around You, a show I fucking adored, and lots of people went out, especially it was a real comedian's favourite, wasn't it, that show. Would you do more? Would you and Peter work again together?
We would work again. I mean, we wouldn't do more because no one would let us do more. that was a long time ago.
You'd have to self-fund it now.
Yeah. I mean, I like the first series the most, the sort of weird sciencey ones. They were my favourite. I would sort of happily make them till I die because they were the most fun I've ever had doing anything. Yeah, we sort of made it originally. If people haven't seen it, the first series were like 8-10 minute fake scientific programs, schools programs, really from the like late 70s, early 80s type thing on subjects like iron or sulfur or ghosts.
Thanks, Ants. I think that started a bit of a trend of people merging words together like that.
I remember
that.
Writing that one with Peter, and we literally fell on the floor laughing. Literally, you know, people go, "We fell on." We did actually fall on the floor.
You
laughing.
Did it, yeah.
That was fun. He was a bit drunk.
He was roughing.
We were roughing.
Rolling
on the floor laughing.
You were literally
roughing.
Wow. Yeah.
And so, but that started as just a short film. Because I become friends with Pete on this terrible show I did called You Are Here. We bonded over a thing called Pot Club that we would do at night.
I won't ask you more about that.
We became best buddies and we used to hang out and we realised we liked kind of old, creepy things. And we remember...
Like men. Uncles and...
Uncle Funker.
Yeah, there you go. It's all looped in.
So his uncle would come round. Yeah. My uncle would come round.
Wow. I mean, I really want to run with this concept, like the idea of it being the other way round, that it was the child luring the men in. But that's probably too dark. Let's not go down that road.
Okay, let's not. Yeah, it's good, though. Yeah. I could happily do that.
Yeah.
And we would...
that's the sort of comedy that used to get made on Channel 4.
Yeah, God, bloody hell.
Where's Chris Morris when you need him?
Bloody internet.
Yeah.
Anyway, so whatever. We used to watch old stuff. And mm-hmm. we said, do you remember those old programs that weren't the Open University, but the ones with like this weird blue background that you get shown occasionally at school, and they were never see any. Occasionally, if you're ill, they'd be on TV at home. And what were they? And I was working at Granada at the time, and they were made by Granada, I found out. So I would raid their library and just tape them.
Oh, amazing.
And we would just watch, you know, 12 hours. That was like...
Because I always wondered how you got it so accurate. Well, it's because you actually had...
Most of it was from memory. And then, I think it was after we made this short film, then we started really watching it. But we... Let's do one of these. And then we decided let's do one about calcium and make a short film. And then... I know short films, generally, like, people don't really like them or want to watch them, but if you said to people it's the world's first comedy about calcium, they might go, what? And then want to see it. So we then just made it within 6 weeks, 5 weeks of starting to write it. We just went out and made it. We filmed it illegally everywhere and for no money. And then we had a big, like, showing with lots of comedy people we, like, really admired and stuff. And then it wasn't for a TV show. It was just for fun, you know, just like a hobby. And then what was funny, though, we were trying to sort of like... People then said, why don't you try and get a TV show? So it was on VHS then, and we had lots of copies. And I think I just started working at Channel 4. People would come in and pitch shows to me. And then I would sort of say, oh, have you seen my film? And give them a VHS. But
genuinely the worst commissioning editor ever. Yeah, that's a good idea. But can we talk about me for a minute?
This was before email, so you'd have to hand out a video. Yeah. My aim was, let's spread this word of this thing so people start talking about it. But obviously, you're not meant to come in and pitch things and then go away with a video from the commissioning editor. But I would have, like, I remember under my TV, there would be like a pile of like 40 VHSs, and I'd have them face down with the label down, and I'd go, oh, I think I've got one here, and I would put my hand into the VHSs hoping I wouldn't knock them all on the floor, so there would be 40 VHSs. I think it's this one. Anyway, that sort of led to Talkback, production company, being interested.
Who were the giants of the day?
Yeah, they were nice. And then we made the show.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to see something that you and Peter... I saw... Obviously, we were both at a wedding recently, and he...
obviously, everyone knows
obviously,
that.
Obviously. I have been tweeting it twice daily, so hopefully
the
everyone
wedding.
Knows. Yeah. And he did a little kind of surprise appearance in character. And
as Brian Butterfield.
As Brian
that was
Butterfield.
Very funny.
It was very funny.
Yeah, and he said one bit... to the bride, he said, I know you grew up, when you're growing up, your favourite band will Take That. So now, as a surprise, I give you Take That. What's it? What's his joke? He said, here's Take That. And then here's a pause. He said, apology. I meant Take That as an apology, because Take That can't come. It's not as funny as he did.
But maybe
like, rather than edit that bit out, just play it a few times so it makes me look worse.
Okay. All right, I might just only play that for this podcast for an hour. Well, I'd like to see you too, so please try and like fit something in your schedules and write something together, because it's so funny.
Okay, I will do that for you.
And will there be more Friday Night Dinner? You're on like series
one. I don't know. We just did four.
Four.
Yeah, I don't know.
Amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Next time, I'm going to make it really weird for you.
Well, no, I still I love the show.
No,
I like mainstream stuff, but it's just...
I think I'm going to make the banister partially made of snakes.
Yeah.
What do you think?
No, not with
you've
jumped the snakes
too
there.
Much.
Yeah. No, I like it for what it. For, you know, that sounds wrong. I like the show. I'm just
you
saying.
Don't like snake?
I just didn't expect that show from you.
I know.
That's
totally
all I'm saying.
I didn't expect
you're making me now.
The
like,
thing is, I didn't expect it from me either.
And it actually isn't that. It's not mainstream. It's just more a bit more
but
conventional.
It's sort of become quite mainstream. Yeah. Like people watch.
It's a family
it.
Sitcom.
It's a family sitcom.
There you go. And there's nothing more pleasurable.
I was going to talk about Alf, but you didn't ask me.
No, well, we're going to talk about your guilty pleasure now. You came to me with three options. Now, Alf was a late one, which didn't tickle me as much.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, the good, there is a good one in there then.
You did at one point mention Coming to America as a film which I thought was a surprising choice, because I think people think of that as a good film.
I was never sure. That's good, because I've watched it maybe 10 times. Good. I'm glad people think that's brilliant.
Definitely.
Good.
I think they put it in the four Eddie Murphy films that were brilliant in the 80s.
Fine, we can ignore that.
So you were just like, I like this, but do
I
other people...
I wasn't sure if other people like that one.
I think they do. Now, this is the thing... I loved that you mentioned this. And I haven't seen it myself. Normally, I'll watch something,
it's
but...
lovely.
And lovely is the right word, I think. You picked as your guilty pleasure from TV, which we don't get as often as films, Rosemary and Thyme, the female cop ITV...
Leslie Kendall, Pam Ferris... I think it's on ITV4 now. It might be ITV3.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why did you pick this?
Well, it's... Yeah. So my wife's mum apparently liked Rosemary and Thyme. And my wife occasionally would sit there and watch it with her mum and never liked it. But gradually got used to watching it and said, it's quite mild. And it was on. And she said, oh, I go, what is this? She said, oh, Rosemary. Oh, God, that's awful. She said, well, actually, it is. But I'm sort of vaguely fond of it because my mum would watch it. It's very mild. So we watched it together.
And you love nothing more than mild TV.
I try and make mild shows.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
So we sat there watching it, laughing at it, and then sort of watched another one to sort of laugh at it. And then gradually the mildness takes over and you just watch it and kind of go, hmm. I mean, it's an incredibly boring program and very obvious. What's sort of obvious what's going to happen. It's about two detectives. Well, one of them is a former police officer and the other one's a gardener. They're a gardening team now.
Yeah, yeah.
Rosemary and Thyme.
And they just happen
and
to have
happen
those
to stumble
surnames.
Across a murder every time they go and do a sort of landscape gardening job.
Mm-hmm.
I think every series they go away like twice. Like
who
Italy.
Knew so much murder happened in the gardening world?
Every week.
Yeah.
And it's really bland.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's on now, we like series link it now and we'll generally watch it and go, oh, that was pretty good, that one there. But sort of knowing it's terrible, but now coming to sort of like it.
What actual pleasure do you get from it? What is the feeling you have when you watch it?
Just feeling mild.
Yeah.
It's just sort of gentle.
Yeah.
Boring. And
you
and
like quite, feeling bored?
Quite. No, not really. It's a different kind of boredom. It's like a mild boredom. It's like a warmth, like a nice feeling, nice warm and comfy.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah.
I think those shows are specifically designed to create those feelings, aren't they? Warm,
it must
comfy.
Be a special feeling word for that, yeah. TV. I mean, it's awful. It is awful. I mean, the other day, here's one. It was on the other day. We were flicking. Didn't know what to watch. Oh, Rosemary and Thyme watching. And then we go, oh, we've seen this one.
Oh, no. Wow, you're looping yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it is awful. Lapping. It is awful. But wow. It's sort of quite nice.
Yeah.
And I don't really like mild shows, but that would be my mild show. You could do a thing on mild shows that people enjoy.
Yeah, the 100 greatest mild shows.
London Tonight.
Well, that surprised me, and I love that you picked that. We're going to finish now with your last of your two songs, so that'll be the second one. Can the second be the last? It can still, can't it? Technically.
The second, yeah, unless it's three things.
Yeah. You and I are really good with math and...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm actually not bad with math, to be honest.
But we couldn't work out
percentages, no, but like multiplication, I'm pretty fast.
We had the... So, for the listeners, we were just... we were trying to just decide whether we both are sports fans or not, and we're not. We both said that we don't really like football. What was it you said? You said you don't...
I do
you
like
find it,
but
too,
it's too long.
Too
so
long.
So, rather than being 90-minute game, if it was 9 minutes,
yeah.
2 4-and-a-half-minute halves...
That would be more. And I like the idea that 40,000 people come to a stadium to watch a 9-minute football match with a half an hour break in between the two.
No, that's
4 point.
Funny. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
Half an hour.
But
although it should be the amount of time taking up to 90 minutes. So 4.5 minutes start.
Yeah.
81 minute middle.
Yeah.
4.5 minute at the end.
Oh,
90
wow.
minutes.
So you
imagine
can
just
do that.
81 minutes of people just singing.
Yeah. We couldn't work out what the percentage is. What is 9 minutes out of...
It's 10, isn't it?
Is it?
Of 90. 9 out of 90 is 10%.
Okay.
But we couldn't
but
think
it's less
it.
Of 90% then.
Huh?
It's 90% shorter than a... Oh, my God. See, this is where we've gone wrong.
Yeah, so it's 90%
anyway,
shorter. Anyway,
that amused me. So we're going to play your song. Now, this is... this could be any song, but you picked the film Christiane F. Is that
well,
how
no,
you
asked me music from a film, and I couldn't think of
anything.
But then I remember I used to listen a lot on this tape to the music to Christiane F., which was this unbelievably bleak film from like 1981 about Berlin drug use that we used to watch a lot because it had Bowie music to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not the world's number one fan. but maybe,
definitely four or five. Yeah.
And I cried a lot when he died.
I did wonder why you were dressed as Ziggy Stardust for this podcast. It seemed a bit weird, but...
Well, I was going to come as Aladdin Sane, but I thought Ziggy would be more.
Yeah, I think the White Duke is probably the...
The Thin White Duke
is, like, the most conventional, where you can do things without people...
Yeah, I thought that would be a bit bland.
Okay. What about his 80s, Nile Rodgers era?
No, that wasn't my favourite.
But it was all tanned with white teeth and...
Really looked ridiculously healthy.
Yeah. So you picked this film. I watched some of the film on
YouTube.
Oh, I
can't remember the film. I remember the film was...
It looks beautiful, weirdly.
It was really grim and lovely sort of Cold War Berlin stuff, which I like. I love all that stuff.
Yeah, I love all that stuff too.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
And did you watch, what was it called, Deutschland 83?
I watched the first one and then I...
Couldn't get into it?
No, was it brilliant?
It's amazing.
Was it?
I thought it was amazing. Genuinely one of the best things I've seen.
I thought this is going to be my thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
maybe give one more episode a try.
Yeah, I will.
Anyway, it's that whole era and vibe and thing. But watching this, and there was all these like rockers fighting and punks over there, and I was like, God, we don't get those like groups anymore, do we?
Oh, I remember seeing one as a kid on Brighton as a young kid, and there were rockers and punks or something fighting on the beach in front of. We were in a cafe with my parents, and there was just deck chairs smashed over their heads. Don't have that anymore.
No.
Such a shame.
It's a shame that people don't hate each other based on their haircut anymore. Yeah. Weird. Anyway, so we picked... what song did we pick? Boys Keep Swinging. This is from the film.
And did you know Bowie got the band to swap instruments
when
he played a song? So you hear like...
On the live performance or in the recording?
In the recording, on the actual track.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the drumming is kind of a bit
off.
The bass is a bit... And it just feels sort of... lumpy in a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
So that must mean then, if you are really this much of a Bowie fan, do you say Bowie or Bowie?
I say Bowie.
Bowie. You're this much of a Bowie fan that you must be. Are you out of mourning or do you still.
I'm fine now, but I cried. I cried for a long time and for many days on and off. I would just break
down
in tears. Yeah.
Oh.
I was in tears. Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't it amazing when someone who
he's my favourite artist in anything of all time, and I just loved what he represented. So
he was amazing.
Yeah,
as just his whole kind of outlook and ethos and everything. It was brilliant. Well, can I just say, Bobby Popper? Can I call you that?
You can call me Bobby Popper.
This has been an absolute pleasure.
Been a
even
giggle.
Though you got a little bit tricky in the middle.
Did I?
Yeah, you were a bit I don't want to play this game.
Oh, really? I think I was just hot.
You were hot.
I think I was just being annoying.
Yeah, no. You were doing what you do to your brother by the sounds of things. You did put hair in my water. But no, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. And I can't wait to see more of your work. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
This is David Bowie.